This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Girls on Porn. I'm Rachel.
I'm Laura. And we love porn.
This is our porn review podcast.
We talk about what we love and roast what we hate.
Helping you find hot, ethical, just plain better porn for your spank bank.
And we're looking at everything.
Including in this episode what could arguably not be porn, but
who knows?
Is certainly worth conversation. Today we are talking about erotic fiction, erotic literature, with Almaz Ohini. Welcome, Almaz.
Hi.
Yay.
Hi.
It's so exciting to have you here.
Pleasure.
Almaz is an award-winning creative copywriter and freelance journalist. She is the founder of Kaylee Daniels Dated, a new web platform combining sexy stories with informative sexual health features. She also writes on sexuality for leading publications, including Independent, Refinery 29, and Vice. Almaz is part of the Decolonizing Contraception Collective, a community interest group working within sexual and reproductive health, and is also a sexual health education facilitator with Sexplane, an independent organization running exclusive and comprehensive sex ed workshops in schools. Wow. A woman of many hats.
Yeah. So many hats.
So nice to talk to you, especially about the subject that we have so many people who wanted us to cover, and we were always like, we don't know anything about it, so now we have a quote-unquote expert.
Yay! Yeah, how would you say that you found your path into both sexual education and erotic fiction?
So I've always written really raunchy stories. I started doing it when I was in school, just for me. And then when I was at university, I started sending them around to friends and they were like, oh, these are really good. And then as I've got older, I've kind of developed my style and kind of decided to kind of create a content brand around the writing and get them illustrated. And then it was after I launched the project in 2018 that I then found myself on the kind of sex education scene. And then I started working with Decolonizing Contraception and Sexplane in 2018, 2019.
Yeah. Cool.
Because I'm a sex ed nerd and I talk constantly on this show about a very progressive sex ed class I took in middle school that changed my life. Will you just tell us a little bit more about Sexplane and about this Decolonizing Contraception?
So in the UK, sex ed is not compulsory in schools yet. Will be from September 2020. Although this month, there's just been news that because of coronavirus, the government is giving schools more time to prepare. I'm not really sure what they have to prepare. So it's been delayed until the summer term next year. But we're just very much focused on giving the young people the facts about pleasure and that sexuality is a spectrum and you should be free to express your sexuality in ways that you want to. And we also talk a lot about not putting so much emphasis on penis and vagina sex.
Because that's pretty progressive.
Yeah, it's really fun. Really fun.
Yeah, that's great.
I wish that's the kind of sex ed that I had.
Yeah.
Except instead, my sex ed teacher was like, women can't experience pleasure from
what,
sex.
Can or can't?
Cannot.
Oh.
It is impossible.
Oh, dear.
Like, sex is not for women. And I was like, I think you might be wrong. Yeah.
All that teacher did was tell you about how unfortunate her life was.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Looking back now, I was like, wow, what a loveless marriage she was trapped in.
Yeah.
So you started writing this stuff like when you were younger. Do you feel like you were always kind of like a horny kid?
Yeah, always. Yeah,
for sure. For sure. Yeah, us too.
Yeah. Rachel and I talk about doing like little doodles. Like Rachel's an expert at it and it's still her party trick. I also would like draw women with big boobs and like men just being like, let's do it, even though I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
But to actually write erotic stories as a child, that's very cool.
Yeah.
I did not advance to that level.
Well, I mean, 18 is not a child. Like, I was,
oh, that's when you started. Yeah, okay. Yeah, in my mind, you were like 10.
No.
Yeah.
I started writing properly steamy stuff when I was 18.
Oh, nice. Did you ever read erotica growing up or like erotic fiction? Or was it just something that you just, it just sort of fell into your lap?
Yeah, so because I studied literature at uni and I did it at A-level and reading was a massive part of my life and just so much literature is just full of like raunchy bits.
Yeah.
So I can't even remember the name of some of the titles, but I remember being still in primary school and just stumbling across a book in the library that was like had some explicit sex in it.
Right.
So I was like, ooh, that sounds cool.
Yeah. Actually, that's funny that you mentioned that because I remember actually now, I hadn't thought about this in years, but I remember being in elementary school and like renting a book from the library and I have no idea what it was called, but it was like the second page was like talking about like this. It was about like a tortured young prince and he was like petulant and he was like upset and he like stripped his clothes off as he walked down the hallway and like got naked. And I was like, whoa, this is hot. And I was like, definitely in like, I was in like third grade. Like, why was that in my like my elementary school library? But thank God it was, you know?
Yeah.
Went home and had a great time with my pillow later. You know,
I got no issue with that being in the library. It sounds pretty tame, honestly.
Yeah. But when you're in third grade.
Yeah, you know? We've got to tease these desires somehow. Mm-hmm. So, and this is a question for both of you, because I actually don't know Rachel's answer either. But like, would you say that you currently have a relationship with erotic fiction that works its way into your sex life? Like, do you have favorites by your bedside, or is it more a professional thing than like something that you personally return to?
So right now I'm just really busy with loads of different projects. So I don't really have time to incorporate raunchy materials into my own sex life at the moment, which is kind of distressing. It's like, oh, I'm a professional sex educator now. Right, but I don't have that much time to incorporate cool stuff into my own sexual practice.
Listen, I know exactly what you mean. Rachel is much better at being like, yeah, today I squirted, like, check me out. And I'm like, I barely have time to like recreationally watch porn. Like, like porn has become a job, and I think partners expect like so much more than me just being like, yeah, just some sex, and then I go to sleep. Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Well, you'll be pleased to know that when I was researching this episode and reading some Anaya Snin, I was like, I don't know if it's the combination of that and like maybe I'm ovulating, but I am like running around humping everything I can find at the moment. I'm like, I am a fan of erotic fiction.
Yeah. Right.
Just something about like being able to use my imagination at the same time. And also, I mean, I'm a sucker for like period pieces, and you know, obviously I'm imagining these people in like 1930s France and I'm immediately horny, you know.
I knew that Anaïs Nin would be a hit for Rachel when I picked it, because I was like, we're gonna go to early 20th century Europe, we're gonna be on a fucking decadent tour through Paris and other parts of the continent.
There are tapestries and a bear rug.
There's tapestries, there's like there's
Moroccan
constant
pillows.
Yeah, constant discussion of like cedar wood and like scents and like texture and like opium dens, but then also like decadent pillows and beds and like lace
silk
underwear.
Like, everything is silk. Yeah. And like skin is silky, like lingerie is silky, hair is silky, lips are silky. I'm like, this is horny as hell. I'm so into it.
But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah,
we're not,
sorry.
We're not talking about ninjas yet.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, but on that same vein, though, Almaz, was there ever like a, or are there authors or writers whose style you really appreciate and kind of, not emulate, but, you know, get inspired by?
So my own writing style is very singular and stripped back. And that's a bit like Lydia Davies. I don't think she writes that much raunchy stuff.
Yeah.
I've noticed that the way I sometimes describe sex acts is kind of a bit similar to how Sally Rooney describes things.
Okay.
Yeah, right. very hot right now.
Yeah. Yes.
Super in.
Do you know, I'm so jealous of her. I'm just her work is just so amazing.
I think a friend of mine posted on Instagram after having read Normal People, he like looked up her bio and was like, she is 28. Like, however, she's a child. Like, she's so young.
Yeah.
And it just was infuriating to me because I really pictured someone in their like 40s or 50s like finally having their moment was like god damn it but whatever, it's deserved.
I haven't read Normal People, but is it pretty raunchy? Like, is it steamy in the writing?
Not particularly, but it's just so grounded in reality. And like physical she describes physical sensations in a way that's really true to how it feels like in your actual body. Well, as a cis woman.
Yeah. Right. I like that. I'm just curious because I'm like, I hope that it's taking the place of like 50 Shades of Grey, but
we don't need to give that any more airtime.
Okay,
it's,
cool.
It's been around for nearly a decade already. It just needs to die.
Yeah.
I am curious. I want to read Normal People because now I'm ruining everything. But the only thing that bumped me about the TV series was how they dealt with the BDSM stuff. Like, I didn't totally buy exactly how that interaction went down, that it was just like, hey, be my dom, person who, as far as we know, has no experience in this realm. And I missed hearing safe words and feeling like it was consenting. And maybe that was sort of the point, is that she got herself into a situation that didn't have clear boundaries, but I didn't feel like it was dealt with. So it just that sort of leaned into the like, man, this chick is fucked up, rather than like BDSM is actually quite often a very healthy expression of complicated relationships with sex and trauma. So anyway, I'm here to ruin Normal People as much as it luscious. Like, the rest of the show is absolutely delicious.
So the problem that I have with that scene in the TV show is that they did colorblind casting and randomly inserted like a black guy as the dom. That for me, like, the producers just kind of forgot that actually there's a whole load of like race theory behind that, and like perpetuating certain harmful stereotypes. In the book he's supposed to be like a indigenous Swedish guy, like blonde, but in the TV series he's not.
And again, let's bring in a violent guy and have it one of the very few black characters
exactly
in the show.
Exactly.
Bummer. Yeah.
Well, I'm writing to my TV network. I don't know how to do that, but that was my only issue I had with it. Because, I mean, it's a very white show otherwise, being an Irish show.
Ireland.
But, Listen, I'm glad we're calling it out, because we can't just hold everything up on a pedestal because it has luscious sex scenes in it. You know, it's not enough.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
The source material is is really layered, so I would definitely recommend going to that.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have to read it.
Yeah.
I mean, now that I'm just super into erotic fiction, I've come to find...
Yeah, I do feel like I turned a corner researching for this episode, like, truly had to confront myself and be like, why don't you read erotic fiction all the time? Like, why is that just, like, the occasional recreational thing? Like, who says you can't like just do that at night before like a little Jill sesh or something? Like, it's delicious and stimulating, and as Rachel already said, like, I love what it does for my imagination and resolves a lot of the problems of, you know, navigating porn and trying to find like worthwhile work in this space, which is our whole endeavor. But so much erotic fiction is delicious and just as effective, I think, at getting me going.
I think true. As well, I found that a lot of the erotic material that I've read is coming from a place of desire rather than like wanton violence, like a lot of porn is.
That's a good point.
Which is why maybe it, I connected with it when I was a teenager, because it was just about sensuality and desire. And although some of the passages that I read were like BDSM stuff, it was from a place of safety rather than, than just like.
Yeah, well, what you said about it being from a place of desire, like it satisfies so much of what I ask of porn almost unfairly, and that it has a compelling like psychological dynamic, and you can get inside the brain of the character and embody their desire and that tension, and it just makes it hotter for me that way, because you feel their pull towards that moment rather than watching two performers and being like, is everyone okay? Does everyone want to be here, or was this just the scene you were assigned today? You know, like it just has, it's much more compelling. It could be very compelling that way, I think.
Yeah, the stuff that I miss from porn that I like expect in like, you know, mainstream cinema, you know, you get in erotic fiction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you watch porn?
Do I watch porn? Yes. It's part of my my work as a sex educator. I do watch porn.
Oh, sure.
And I went to the Berlin Porn Film Festival last October and the London one last year. And I'll be going again once they're back. Because we do, in the professional work that I do, we just talk about how to tell teenagers about the realities of porn. Like, porn is porn. It's not how real sex is.
Right, it's fantasy,
And the problem is that parents are really scared of actually viewing porn, and also legislators in the UK have never even looked at any kind of ethical porn, so they always try and blanket ban it, and it's just really frustrating. So we're really trying to get people to understand that aggregate porn sites and ethical porn sites are really different.
Yes. Like, that's truly different down to the business model and what drives them, and therefore the content that is produced. Yeah. Exploitative versus self-motivated and ethical and meaningful and helpful to society versus destructive.
Exactly.
So how did you get started on Kaylee Daniels Dated, and tell us a little bit about the show? The series.
So, to be honest, I think the summer I left university in 2011, I had this idea to do some kind of like raunchy project that was like stories with illustrations. And I actually put out a call for commissions, and it was a story called, and it was a project called The Best Sex I Ever Had Was the Sex I Never Had. And it was about kind of missed opportunities. But basically, I didn't have any money, and I also didn't have any capabilities of like running a project. So that just died a death. But then it was always sitting at the back of my head. And then I kind of started a career working in the advertising agency of the advertising industry, and kind of got loads of production skills and like creative direction skills there. And just in 2017... just decided to think about launching the project. So I bought the domain name and then spent about a year like planning how it would be and sourcing all my collaborators, which I self-fund. So I pay all of my creatives. And I just started writing these raunchy stories from the perspective of Kaylee. And she kind of has lots of sexy situations, but also some that are really non-consensual, because I think it's really important to show in fiction how women and men can find themselves in kind of dangerous non-consensual situations as well.
So you sent us three of them. One is the Silver Fox, and one is the White Isle, I believe, and then the Writer. And I love that each of them sort of centers on a specific like escapade, like a specific adventure, we'll say.
a Tinder match too, right? Or a kind of like a profile. There's like a profile attached.
Yeah, so each of the characters, I've created like top trump cards for each of the characters. So they've each got their own like backstories and stuff.
Yeah.
For me, it's really important that the characters feel authentic. And to give them authenticity, they have to have like a backstory.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's great.
So I've had such fun creating the whole world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love your writing style. They're so, like you said, it's sort of restrained writing. Like, it's sort of sparse. Yeah. Like, we just get, like, bits and pieces and, like, tastes, so to speak.
I feel like it's perfect for, like, our generation's attention span. It really is. Like, there's no fat, you know? Like, it's like, and it's just enough to be, like, tantalizing and exciting.
Exactly. It's a very fun, like, sexy tease. Like...
Mm-hmm. I loved the Silver Fox one.
Oh, that's the one I have open too. Yeah.
But like, of course, on brand, I would.
Yeah. Yeah, I stood up and I loosened my belt, unbuttoned my dress, and let it fall to the floor. His jeans strained against his erection. I sat on his lap, my legs either side of his. He put two of his fingers in my mouth and pushed them inside me hard. Like, it's so simple and delicate and hot.
Yeah,
it's working for me.
Yeah, it's like just enough, you know, it's not in terms of like what's on the page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
so they do take an extraordinary amount of time to write.
Really?
They take, so each 350 word story takes me a month to do.
Oh, wow.
What's that process look like?
So the process is So I kind of, over an afternoon of maybe 4 hours, I'll write down the first draft, which is crap, and then I have to let it sit for like a week, and then I redraft it over another afternoon, and then I spend another full day tweaking it. But they do have to percolate over a month or so.
Sure. Do you feel
ages.
Like majority of these stories are from fantasies, or are any of them like... a little bit of real life experience.
So this is
curious.
The question that everyone asks.
I know.
And people that know me well and know some of my personal history and who I've dated can recognize elements in some of the stories.
Yeah.
However, they're all fictional stories, but I have inserted elements of myself into her stories.
Sure.
And I think that's why it feels really real.
Mm. Yeah, like even if it's more fiction than real life, like there's some texture of inspiration in the characters and also in like how that character carries herself, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. But also because I've got all the characters' like likes and dislikes, and they're all set in London. All those characters are people that you could recognise in London. Mm-hmm. So, like, people that have read the stories might think, oh, yeah, I once shagged this person who was a bit like June Unprotected.
Yeah, because there's only, like, 10 people in London, right? Like, we all know each other.
Exactly. It's true.
And I love that it also incorporates, like, this... educational component. Can you talk a little bit about how that works in the series?
Yeah, so each of the raunchy stories has a companion body talk piece, which I've commissioned out to sexperts, and they take a theme from the story. So in the Silver Fox one, she gets finger banged, and if you're doing lots of finger banging, there's a risk of getting cystitis if you've got dirty fingers. So
which
I got
Silver Fox definitely has.
So I got a doctor to explain how to avoid getting cystitis if you're going to be engaging in those kind of sex acts.
Right.
Because at the time that I started the project, there was really, or had the idea for the project, there was really no like materials for women like me who were already who had quite active sex lives. There was the clinic, which just give you like medical advice.
Right.
But they don't tell you how to navigate the situations in real life. But since I had the idea for the project, there's been loads of sex ed for adults kind of things springing up, which is good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I think sexual education is a lifelong journey.
Said it before, I'll absolutely.
Say it again. Put it on a damn t-shirt, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I have some fun stats and some things that I found. I also spent hours compiling the history of erotic fiction, which, you know, I could basically just tell you now, it's been around for forever.
Yeah.
That's all you need to know. It's been around for forever. And the oldest love poem ever found was from 2037 BC, which is insane. Wow. It's in cuneiform. Google that if you want to know what it is.
Like,
I can't tell you what forum that is. I can't tell you. And then, you know, it's been around for forever. Ancient Greece, yada, 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 medieval period. When we get the printing press, then it's like, oh, we've got increased restrictions. And then it started getting like handwritten manuals, things like that. We get the Marquis de Sade. Flash forward.
Groundbreaker.
We get, you know, Henry Miller and Nabokov and Anais Nin. And then in the 21st century, we start to see a lot more prominent female writers rise and gain commercial success. Woohoo!
Yay!
I know.
That was a great, very fast little history lesson.
Thanks. Well, I didn't want to bore anybody.
Flew through time. Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't that fun? Also, some interesting statistics. According to research compiled by Adam and Eve in 2016, the romance erotica genre makes $1.4 billion per year, the highest amount of money than any other book genre.
Oh, wow.
What?
Isn't that nuts?
So when you're putting like romantic erotica up against like sci-fi, it's like beating sci-fi.
Yeah, and mystery. Yeah, yeah. Isn't that nuts?
Wow.
I did not know that.
I know. According to the Journal of Sex Research, women who read romance or erotic novels have an astounding 74% more sex with their partners than those who don't.
See, what am I doing?
I know.
I need to get my brain... What's the word? Sex organ. Good Lord.
I know.
That's my sexual organ of choice. So
right.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Hate to bring it back to this, but 50 Shades of Grey was the fastest selling paperback ever, selling more than 200,000 copies in 1 week. Nuts.
Boo.
Wow.
I know.
Boo.
Also, this is a funny little thing. The author Peter C. Hayward, who writes erotica under the name Pandora Box, came up with this idea that like there's this of the golden 12 erotica genres that find consistent readership. Do you want to hear what those are? Because they're kind of fun.
Yeah.
Stories that feature a billionaire or other modern alpha males. Which, you know, these kind of go hand in hand with porn, honestly. incest and pseudo-incest. So, like, between women and their stepfathers and men and their adopted sisters.
Adopted sisters. That's specific.
Yeah. Shapeshifters. Monsters.
Uh-huh.
Twilight, you know, right? Students and teachers.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Gang banging.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Cuckolding.
Yep.
This one.
I like that we're like, yes, I've heard of that. Mm-hmm. Seems very popular. I would agree.
Uh-huh. This I thought was interesting. Gender swapping.
Oh.
Yeah.
Gender swapping.
I don't know if that means like I wake up and I'm a man.
Or is it just a... Yeah, what is that? Is that performative gender? Like, is that like... just about clothing and like performative identity?
Oh,
like, how do
maybe.
You swap a gender?
Oh, see, I thought it was like sci-fi, like you wake up and like, you know.
Yeah, like is it Freaky Friday gender swappy stuff?
Yeah.
Like is it a
I don't know, that's where I went.
Mainstream geared like comedy movie for the family, or is it or like a role playing exercise between two people? I'm curious.
Men
I
in suits.
Don't know.
Or women in suits, I mean.
Hmm.
Yeah. Sleeping or unconscious sex.
Okay.
Interesting. Uh-huh. Weird. Fun for those who like it, I guess. Ménage à trois.
Uh-huh, definitely.
And last but not least, cowboys.
Cowboys.
Cowboys. Yeah. You can really tell that this list is American. We don't have cowboys in London.
That is a great point. It absolutely was an American list, probably.
I can't relate to much of that list. Like, I feel like there's a lot left out, but I appreciate the gesture.
Yeah, I don't know if it's... I think, to me, these kind of, like, evoke the paperback Fabio cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yes.
Are the subgenres specifically.
Exactly.
That kind of smut literature.
Yeah.
Which I'm not high, you know, I'm not looking
not
down
high-minded
on.
Erotica. Yeah.
This isn't the elevated erotica.
No.
How do you guys feel about this idea that, like, women tend to read more erotica rather than men? Like, if we're just thinking in terms of gender as, like, you know, binary. But, like, this old idea that, like, well, of course, women need their mind, you know. Men are visual. Because I was researching, like, the appeal of erotica, you know. Like, my favorite thing to do for episodes is, like, what? What is the appeal? Like, why is it hot? And so I was doing that for this. And everyone's like, why women specifically read erotica? Like, why women are into erotic fiction?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I could answer a question like that with a lot of gender tropes that are sort of expiring, of like, men are more visual and women are more emotional. Like, I don't really love buying into those concepts. I could see how they would be more at play looking back historically, you know, like how we're socialized, et cetera, et cetera.
Is it because, like, in most cases, like, it's a female protagonist?
Well, I mean, that's probably a closed loop, right? Of, like, who are we writing for? Who's our audience?
Yeah.
That's true.
You know?
That's fair enough.
Yeah. And I kind of relate it to the fact that more guys are into like these porn video games and like video gaming.
Okay.
Women aren't into that as much.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's sort of just a combination of many things, because porn has been for so many years designed for a male audience.
Right.
And that male audience is kind of evolved and gotten edgier and edgier, and like looking for crazier
things. This podcast
and
is here
to
say that it's not just for men, honey. It's for everybody.
Yeah, so I think it's a little bit those dynamics, but I don't want to believe that it's like a all-encompassing stereotype.
Right.
Like, I want to read some Anais Nin to a partner and get fucking heated and have a good time, and I certainly imagine that could happen.
I think it absolutely.
Plenty of my partners. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, 65% of visitors to my site are men.
Oh, really?
In fact, an analyst, I just had an analyst look through everything just recently, and he brought those stats, and I was so shocked, because Kaylee, in my head, I was making this project for women like me.
Yeah.
And then to have like 65% of the audience actually men is a really, really interesting.
Yeah. We have a slight majority of men as well. Like our audience,
listeners.
Our listeners are slightly more men. I forget the exact percentages, but it is a similar statistic, I want to say. Like 60-40, Rachel, am I remembering?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Something like that, which we partly wondered if it was just because it's a slightly male-centric platform and part of our existing audience came from guys who are fans of specific male comedians who also have podcasts on this network.
Yeah.
Or if it is like a lot of male audience that wants to know more about porn. I mean, I'm a diehard optimist, but I want to believe that there are a lot of men out there that aren't satisfied with the edgier, you know, deeper, darker porn, and that there are folks who are interested in having their brains stimulated in their erotic consumption.
Well, let us introduce you to erotic fiction.
Yeah.
Listeners.
Here we are.
Oh, wow.
So shall we talk through our Bad Sex Award winners or finalists?
God, yes,
absolutely. Yeah. This is kind of in lieu of a showdown because we can't really search erotic fiction on a porn aggregate.
An aggregate and find anything meaningful. And this was also sent to us by Almaz, who I had no idea this existed, who like introduced us to the Bad Sex Awards, which Morrissey of musical fame.
Yes.
One.
I'm done. Like, when I saw that he was on there, I was like, no.
Yeah. His Should I just read his excerpt first and then we can kind of go back and forth to some favorites? Yeah. So this is from List of the Lost by Morrissey. Please note that what I'm about to say is one sentence. At this, Eliza and Ezra rolled together into the one giggling snowball of full-figured copulation, screaming and shouting as they playfully bit and pulled at each other in a dangerous and clamorous roller coaster coil of sexually violent rotation, with Eliza's breasts barrel-rolled across Ezra's howling mouth and the pained frenzy of his bulbous salutation extenuating his excitement as it whacked and smacked its way into every muscle of Eliza's body except for the otherwise central zone.
Like, oh, God.
This, to me, reminds me of, like, when I would have to write something for school, and like in Microsoft Word you could like highlight something and like it would give you like a thesaurus option. Like, I feel like he just wrote something really stupid. Like, he wrote something really dull and boring, and he was like, I don't know, like, what's another word for big? Oh, bulbous. Cool. Yeah.
Salutation. Extenuating his excitement.
Yeah.
Otherwise central zone is also...
This is... Yeah, I'm like, otherwise central zone, like, you... Like, what about that is hot?
Yeah.
Literally nothing.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Yeah. Like, how did this happen?
I'm nearly crying that it's so bad.
Yeah.
Because I have much respect for Morrissey other ways, like, other talents.
That's why I'm like, is it a joke? Because, like, there's no way anyone read this and, like, anything happened in their nether regions. Like, there's just no way.
The thing is, like, good sex scenes are really, really difficult to write.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And often writers try to add realistic sex into their novels or poems or mm-hmm. short stories and just fall short because it's really difficult to... write about it in a way that feels real and is also sexy.
Mm. Yeah.
I just was curious about what we think that challenge is. Like, I think partially it's trying to describe sex organs over and over, like trying to describe like body parts and sex organs and like the sensation of someone's body without being either repetitive or sounding overly clinical, which is also something that you very expertly avoid the trap of, Almaz, that like, it's got to be so difficult to like pick the right wording that's going to be tantalizing and also not sound ridiculous and also not sound clinical.
That was like some of the problems that I had with the stuff on this list. I mean, majority of it, I was like, okay, I need like, you know what turns me on? I found out adverbs. Give me a fucking adverb, like anything. Like, this is so boring. And also... Like a lot of it, the Erica Jong piece, it was so boring. Like it felt weirdly clinical and also crude at the same time.
Do you want to read that sample?
Yeah, I do. I slip in. This is from Fear of Dying. I slip into bed, amazed that Asher is making the first move, which is unusual for him. While I lie next to him, astounded by his presence still, he opens my silk robe and touches my cunt as if he were Adam just discovering Eve's pussy. Beautiful, he says. And then he begins to run his tongue slowly along my labia, gently inserting one finger to feel for my G-spot on the front wall of my wet pussy. I think it's like specifically that last sentence that I'm like...
Yeah, like this is an example of like, oh, it was so close.
Yeah.
And yet, like... And you even added front wall of my wet pussy, but it was just on the front wall of wet pussy.
Yes, you're right.
Which is like weirdly more clinical, but we have the word pussy. Like, it's this is what I'm like, oh, it's such a delicate dance because like I'm here and I sort of get what's happening and how it's hot. But we immediately are like, labia, front wall, G-spot. Like, and it's like,
but then also pussy, you know?
Also
pussy and cunt, which is like, what's going on here?
So part of the reason is because as a society, we're really sex negative. We're not given any tools in order to explain what's happening in our bodies when we experience pleasure. Mm-hmm. So we literally really struggle to find our own vocabulary to express that.
Yeah.
So what we do have is we do have all the anatomical and biological terms, which are not sexy terms.
Yes. Mm.
So I think until we move into a more sex positive society, we're still gonna get really terrible like sex scenes.
Yeah, you're terrible attempts at it. Because I think you're right that there's sort of a split mm-hmm. there between, we have two options and it's either like clinical or it's a cuss word, you know? And like, yeah. I love the word cunt and like want that incorporated in my erotica, but it's right. hard. It's still hard to do it and have it not feel jarring or like, yeah. you know, have it sort of feel fluid as opposed to, you know, like the cunt has so many interpretations and so many of them are just harsh, you know? So it's hard to utilize.
Remember it in Atonement?
Yes.
Ugh, oh, yes, good, in Atonement.
That was
yes,
a good
that's
use.
An excellent, yes.
Use of the word cunt.
Yeah.
Ugh. Wow. Yeah. Pour one out for Atonement. A great, like, I masturbate to that movie now.
it's so beautifully shot.
It's yeah. stunning.
Yeah. yeah.
And that green silk, again, silk. Silk is just my favorite thing, apparently. The green silk dress that she wears.
But again, like, I always try to go back to the source material. So the novel Atonement,
yeah.
what I remember, the author Ian McEwan really builds up all of that sexual tension
yes.
in the beginning of that book as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Should I read one more of these favorite
bads? Oh my god,
I could read
all of these all day. There's so much material here.
All right, I'm gonna take Fates and Furies. I also loved Richard Bausch, if you want to take that. So Fates and Furies by Lauren mm-hmm. Groff.
Yeah.
The party yes. was loud. She pushed him back on the sandy tar paper, and he was looking up at her face in the glow, and she lifted her skirt and moved the crotch of her underwear aside, and Lotto, who was always ready, who was ready at the most abstract imaginings of a girl, footprints of a sandpiper like a crotch, gallons of milk evoking boobs, was not ready at this oh-so-abrupt beginning. It didn't matter. Gwenny shoved him in, though she was dry. He shut his eyes and thought of mangoes, split papayas, fruits tart and sweet and dripping with juice, and then it was off, and he groaned, and his whole body turned sweet. Like, that like, almost got hot at the end with the fruit stuff. But, like, sandpiper like a crotch, sandy tar paper.
Yeah. And also, like, her dry, but I just was like, ugh.
Don't be having sex with dry vaginas.
I know. And she shoved him in, even though she was dry. Like,
yeah. Like, I was like, I don't think this is meant to be hot. Like, I think this is yeah. meant to be an unfortunate sex
uncomfortable.
Scene.
Yeah, it must.
But because, who knows? Because then his yeah. whole body turns sweet. Like, how's she doing, yeah. Lauren? Like, yeah. I'm wondering yeah. if Gwenny's okay. She
I
was
know. Did
dry
she enjoy
as ever.
It?
Does yeah. she? Does that change?
Yeah. Does she ever get some self-lubricating anything happening? I don't know.
I think as well, like, people tend to lean on metaphor too often when we're talking about sex.
Yeah.
Because, again, it's because we literally don't really have a confident vocabulary to talk about it.
Yeah.
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 It's true.
It's true.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Before, During, and After by Richard Bausch.
Love it.
Okay. She reached up and brought him to her, then rolled over on top of him and began softly to move down. When she took him, still a little flaccid, into her mouth, he moaned. Oh, lover. She felt him harden, and she tightened her lips and pulled, and then ran her tongue slow along the shaft, and then straightened and straddled him, guiding him into her, sinking and rising on him, head back, hands gripping his shoulders. It went on. It was very good.
Okay, so your reading of that
like
actually
this.
Made it, like, better.
Yeah, I like this. I think it's fine. Yeah.
Okay, but here's the thing. It went, if a man or whoever ever described, like, a sex act with me as, like, it went on, it was very good, like, I would need therapy immediately. Like, that's all you have to say about it? It went on. It was very good. Like,
yeah, it has
that's
a lackluster
it.
Landing. I wanted to root for the part where it was, like, still a little flaccid, but, like,
yeah.
even
yeah.
describing it that way, like, it's setting up. It's like using the wrong lead, right? Like,
yeah.
you're still a little like, I want to acknowledge that dicks have to get hard and that
yeah,
like
yeah.
foreplay is a thing, but it made it extremely unhot and was like,
right.
oh, this part. And then it hardens, but like, we could
yeah.
have just skipped the still a little flaccid and then talked
yeah.
about its hardening and implied
yeah.
like, that's part of the process as opposed
right.
to being like, oh, this limp dick. Like, I feel like it was trying to achieve the same thing I would want it to achieve, but was doing so in a counterproductive way. Again, like, so close. Like,
right.
I was so
right.
this was so close to being
so
fine.
Close.
And just like a few tiny little missteps. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, where are we, Richard? Like, what happened?
She felt him hardened. But like, I want to know how. Like, how did she, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, what was it like?
Yeah. Yeah. More detail anyways. Around that.
I mean,
oh boy. Valiant efforts all. I applaud anyone trying to write a sex scene, and I want more sex scenes in the world. Right. So I feel bad ripping on these, but now it has to be done.
And like what? Now we have a podcast where we just review erotic fiction? Like, listen to us. Like, we're goddamn experts. Like, what do we know?
Oh, well, boy. Shall we take a quick little break and we'll come back and talk about E.E. Cummings and Anais Nin?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Can't wait.
Cool.
All right. Be right back.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
And we're back.
We're back.
What do we want to start with? Delta of Venus or E.E. Cummings?
Let's start with Tom.
May I feel, said he, by E.E. Cummings. May I feel, said he. I'll squeal, said she. Just once, said he. It's fun, said she. May I touch, said he. How much, said she. A lot, said he. Why not, said she. Let's go, said he. Not too far, said she. What's too far, said he. Where you are, said she. May I stay, said he. Which way, said she. Like this, said he. If you kiss, said she. May I move, said he. Is it love, said she. If you're willing, said he. But you're killing, said she. But it's life, said he. But your wife, said she. Now, said he. Ow, said she. Tip top, said he. Don't stop, said she. Oh no, said he. Go slow, said she. Come, said he. Said she. You're divine, said he. You are mine, said she.
Wow.
So that was Tom Hiddleston reading May I Feel, Said He by E.E. Cummings. I hope we don't get into trouble around licensing. the video sharing it on YouTube is like, I don't own this. Tell me to take it down. And it has 25,000 views and no one's taking it down. So,
yeah.
Feel free to contact us and we'll edit it out of the episode. So this is a video and like voiceover combined. Like somebody has sort of made a music video-ish of Tom Hiddleston reading this poem.
So it was actually recorded for something called The Love Book. which was lots of British actors recorded some love poetry for this audio book. Mm-hmm. So I think it's from there.
Oh, wow. I see. And they just like threw Michelle Dockery in just for the video.
Yeah, I don't know. The video is just a fan vid.
Yeah, I think somebody just like compiled footage, right?
Yeah, like from like another, from like a perfume ad, probably.
Yeah.
So this piece, this poem, leaves a lot up to interpretation, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can do, I mean, it's also like a lot. I've never read something that, you know, relies mostly on dialogue. And it rhymes.
Yeah. It's just so... It just really evokes, like, the affair.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it feels scandalous a little bit. Like, it's always felt, like, dangerous to me because... Just like tiny little, like your wife, but like we have to, like don't stop, you know, like you feel the urgency of that. And it's so delicate and again, sparse, like so little is said, but so much is implied and
conveyed. And then also Tom Hiddleston's delivery as well.
Oh, sure.
Is sexy. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somehow I feel like she didn't come. And that just, you know, like of course a man wrote this. Because it ends with his orgasm.
Yeah.
And she just goes,
Yeah.
And he's like, you're divine. And then, of course, it's like, she says, you are mine. And then he just doesn't respond. The poem ends. It's terrible.
Rachel's bringing her trauma.
All I can think about is how she's like, you're divine. And she's like, you're mine. It's like, well, what does he say? You know? That's my main takeaway from this.
Many interpretations available.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's all of the above. I think it's like a little bit scandalous. And I was like, she says and like, ow at one point. But like, also tells him not to stop. Like, I just imagine it being like one of those like breathless, like.
Yeah.
Oh, we have to fuck. Which, like, frankly, I usually don't come in those situations. Like, usually I'm like, I had a great time, but, like...
I just need the friction.
No, I didn't have an orgasm inside of that, like, furious three-minute sex session. You know, it was more about the urgency of it than it was about my climax.
Yeah. Right, right. Good
point.
So
a little bit that's what it, like, sort of seems to lend itself to.
Yeah.
For me, it was almost as if they're doing something in a small space.
Oh, sure.
And, like, if you're trying to maneuver to have sex, you often, like, hit things.
Oh, sure.
And it's like, ow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Or, like, sit on a pen or something that stabs your bum.
Right, right.
Also, when he says, like, may I move, that kind of implies that, like, they're navigating a tiny space. That sort of fits into that interpretation, I would say.
Right.
Listen, I'm friends with E.E. Cummings. I called.
What's
about?
He gotta say?
And he was like, I had really hot sex at a wedding in a coat closet, and I never forgot about her.
Yeah, right. Okay, now I'm interested.
Yeah. Now Rachel's into it.
Now
I think
I'm
it's
into
lovely.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, it also just goes to show that, like, delivery of like erotic poetry or erotic literature is so key.
Right. That's true.
I had a short-lived audiobook VO career, and part of what I would do was read like self-published authors. Like, you could get on a platform and be paired with self-published authors, and a lot of what I got was like Harlequin romance, quote unquote, or just like basically soft porn. But like one in particular was like clearly someone's sort of just like game of make-believe. It was like, and then she won an Oscar, and then she dated a rock star, and then they were friends, and there were like sex scenes, and they were tough to read. Well, me and my engineer would have to like take breaks for laughing, which is a cruel thing to say. I hope that author like never listens to this.
Right.
But it was they just were like terrible sex scenes. There's like no way to like elevate them in the delivery, and I tried. So I just wasn't a big enough woman for the job. Tough stuff.
Oh, well.
We also worked with this E.E. Cummings poem
in my like voice and speech classes in theater school. And this is a hard ass poem to like say and make interesting. Like so many of us were like, "Can I?" said she. "You okay? You can," said he. Like it just was like so pedestrian, like coming out of our, but like we didn't know how to make it feel like urgent and intimate.
Yeah.
You know, like that's part of what's I think so lovely about this delivery is it like feels lived in and like small and sensual.
Yeah, he can hit it. I'll let
he
him
could get it.
Yeah, I'll let him.
I mean, before this, honestly, he could. Yeah, like, who do I think I am?
I mean,
am?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to be so obsessed with Tom Hiddleston. I remember I was like felt personally attacked when he dated Taylor Swift. But I think everyone felt that way.
That was a weird time.
Yeah, it was an interesting pairing.
Yeah.
Listen, live your life, Tom and Taylor. Yeah. Live your lives. We should all be so lucky.
I know. Should we talk about Delta of Venus?
Let's fucking talk about Delta of Venus by Anais Nin.
Yeah. What a bad bitch, you know?
What an icon.
Yeah.
Frankly, like
the Carrie Bradshaw of 1930s Paris, France, you know, just out here scandalizing people, talking about her sexcapades.
Mm-hmm.
So
those, for those who don't know, Nin was a writer and essayist. She published her own journals and she wrote erotica, although the erotica was largely commissioned by like a specific client in the Midwest U.S. who commissioned a few different authors to write erotica specifically for him.
Mm.
So Delta of Venus wasn't published in her life. It was published posthumously in 1977,
right,
but it was written in the 1940s.
Yeah.
Which is kind of amazing. And it's considered pretty groundbreaking by a lot of sex-positive feminists. Nin was one of the first female erotica writers, and incorporates also, it's worth saying, in her life, she also studied psychoanalysis.
Oh.
So there's a lot of that in her work. She had a relationship with, one of my favorite details from reading up on her was that she had a relationship with Otto Rank and even took her own clients for analysis and had sex with them on the couch.
Whoa.
And ultimately stopped that work because she was like, I can't be objective. I'm just like too invested in my patients' lives. And I'm like, no shit, you are having sex with them. That feels like it doesn't maintain like the objectivity that I think is required between patient and therapist or psychoanalyst.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned the psychoanalyst thing because there's a lot of stuff with like men loving mother figures.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. In reading this and then reading after the fact that
she
had such, she was so entrenched in Freudian specifically, like psychoanalysis.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, duh. Cause everything's like, he was aroused by his mother's bosoms. Like there was, there's some parts, elements of this. So the excerpt we're going to sort of talk about is from Delta of Venus, specifically Elena or Elena, that specific story, because Delta of Venus is a collection of stories. And yeah, there's so many hints at like pretty literal Freudian interpretation, like some that I take issue with. Like it's my belief that Freud, you know, was groundbreaking, but we've accomplished a lot since then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Particularly around some of the like homosexuality or pansexuality, like the way that that psychologically played out, or was like, oh, he's gay because mother's breasts were taboo. And I was like, I don't think that's it.
Or there's like, a lot of like, they're, you know, she's a lesbian, and but she's jealous because she'll never be fully a man. You know, like her tongue can never do what a penis does.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, we're still doing lots of like, it's really difficult to try and unlearn how to pathologize like sexuality, and that is down to Freud, who pathologized everything.
Interesting.
That bumped me as well about like the lesbian sex and being like, it can never be as a man's penis is, and then, or like, but never be like the pounding penetrative, like this has to have been heterosexual sex because women can't do this for each other. And then even in the like lesbian sex acts, there's a description of like
a lesbian's fingers being like strong like a penis and therefore right. helpful. And I was like, yeah. hands do what I need to be done.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So there's some of that that like sort of shows its age, I yeah. would say. Yeah.
But there still is a lot, you know, it's still pretty groundbreaking in terms of like, you know, talking about like a threesome with three women in 1940s or whatever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just in the like sexual journey of the character, it's such right. a like, fluid, like, oh, we're in an opium den now and like things are happening. And like, I feel like every step of the way you understand the sort of the motivation and what compels this character to mm-hmm. wander, like you're sort of rooting for every sexual encounter she has. And I feel like the tension and the drive of that is really beautifully drawn out.
Mm-hmm.
But it does flow like it like will be in like a childhood memory of one of her lovers, and then we'll come back and she'll be with a different lover and then back with the one that tortures her the most, you know, like it's sort of it moves so fluidly
yeah
through that sort of experience of hers. And it's quite luscious, it's quite decadent, I would say, in much of it.
Yeah. Should I talk about the first little paragraph that we read?
Sure.
I'm going to do a little dramatic reading.
Oh, I'm
for you guys. Okay. When she closed her eyes, she felt he had many hands, which touched her everywhere, and many mouths, which passed so swiftly over her, and with a wolf-like sharpness, his teeth sank into her fleshiest parts. Naked now, he lay his full length over her. She enjoyed his weight on her, enjoyed being crushed under his body. She wanted him soldered to her from mouth to feet. Shivers passed through her body. I love this feeling. Yeah. I like know it very well of like wanting, like loving someone so much that you just want them to crush you. Like you just want their whole weight on you.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I've asked partners to like stay on top of me.
I've done that so much as well. Just like lie on me. I want to feel your weight.
Yeah. Right? That is such a like relatable sensation of being like, just stay and just like crush me. Like many partners are like, I'm scared. Like we'll do it for a little while and be like, but can you breathe? Like we'll like sort of not be comfortable with it.
Oh
but
my
I think
God,
it is such a familiar,
thing.
Like if we love gravity blankets, like absolutely. Yeah. Like I think the intimate sensation of having someone's weight on you can be so powerful and comforting and
I love
appealing.
That. I like ask for it like 3 times a day. I'm like, can you just lay on me for a second? Like again?
It's
my favorite thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this work is so full of things like that, like images and bodily sensations, and like that's why I'm like, yeah, of course Anais like was out here getting it, because so much of the physical sensation feels like it comes from a place of experience. Like it's so textured and specific.
Yeah. This woman knew sex, you know, like she knew these things that like, and that's why I think as readers we're like, oh my God, someone else who knows this.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
That's why it's relatable. Like even when she talks about like the sensations and like she was like shivering and like just the every like so many rich textures of physical sensation in response to a person. Like this made me like miss lovers I haven't fucking thought about or ever referred to as lovers. In like a decade. But I was like,
I'm like, oh, we're saying lovers now.
Like there was something like also about the youthfulness of it and about her sexual sort of. Like, it's
awakening.
A character who is kind of discovering her sexuality and sexual response to different partners.
Yeah.
In a way that I was like, ah, to be young again. Like, I think it says in the essay at one point, or in the story at one point, that she's 25 and the main lover that we're following is 40.
Right.
And
right.
I was like, ah, to be mid-20s again and, like, experiencing early orgasms and, like,
I know
what it is to be, like, emotionally and physically drawn to someone and then also to be drawn to, like, betraying them or to wrestle with, like, jealousy and envy and, like, the burning. Yeah. Like, it made me miss heartache. Like, it reminded me of, like, Call Me By Your Name or, like, Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Like, these decadent European films and like environments that invoke like heartbreak coupled with like burning physical desire.
Yes.
Just
yes.
so rich. Yeah.
Mm.
I have one more excerpt that I can read.
Yeah, do it. Oh, I had a few, actually. Let me read. We had one that we pulled, but I'm going to read this one. There's one from the threesome that's lovely that if you want to read, Rachel, you can. I also pulled this one while I was reading the larger story. Oh. How the honey flowed from her. He dipped his fingers in it lingeringly, then his sex. Then he moved her so that she lay on him, her legs thrown over his legs. And as he took her, he could see himself entering into her, and she could see him too. They saw their bodies undulate together, seeking their climax. He was waiting for her, watching her movements. Like, that to me is just a delicious example of a combination of both metaphor, like the honey flowed from her is like delicious and not like drips of her female ejaculate, like lubrication from, like, it doesn't feel clinical, but I immediately know what it's referring to. Yeah. And just the way that the action moves is so...
I actually feel like Almaz, I remember in the thing that you sent us, the launch story, the Dirty 30.
There was something about 30.
I loved that of like when like spreading your fingers and like the strings of it. I was like, that's fucking horny. Like anytime anyone talks about it and it isn't clinical, it's like kind of kinky, but still sexy. I feel like you
because we forget that like bodily functions can also be sexy. They can also be weird and disgusting,
right?
But in a certain context, they can be really sexy, and we just never really get to talk about that. Yeah, and also, what I like about that extract is you've got something about him watching her.
Yeah,
and I think too often as well in work that pertains to be erotic, you don't have enough watching and being watched and the acknowledgement of that and the enjoyment that you both or all get from that. Yeah. Often we just see things from one lone point of view.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great point that a lot of what Nin's writing does is sort of flow through experience, and you can be experiencing like her physical sensation and then going back to his and talking about that dynamic, which makes it feel more erotic because you're seeing...
Because it's participatory.
Exactly. Yeah. Like both parties or all three parties are engaged and discovering each other, and you're inside of those experiences. It's hotter that way. Like it speaks to that desire again that we talked about earlier.
True.
Yeah.
You want to hear the last one?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
They fell on this, the three bodies in accord, moving against each other to feel breast against breast and belly against belly. They ceased to be three bodies. They became all mouths and fingers and tongues and senses. Their mouths sought another mouth, a nipple, a clitoris. They lay entangled, moving very slowly. They kissed until the kissing became a torture and the body grew restless. Their hands always found yielding flesh an opening.
Nice.
Yes.
Yielding flesh. Like, who knew that that was going to be the thing that was horny? You know?
Yes.
But
I also
like...
love that they kissed until the kissing became a torture and the body grew restless. Like, that's another sensation of, like, I love kissing and will kiss for a really long time. And I love doing that to a point where you're like, oh, I have to do
more, though. Yeah.
You know? But
honey,
not
that is foreplay,
that.
You know?
Yes. Yes.
That's the importance of foreplay right there. Yeah. I just kept, every single time I was like reading something and like taking notes throughout this, I was like, that's horny. this is horny. This is super horny.
When I was really young, I did literally used to underline the raunchy passages.
Really? I love that.
I love that.
Relatable.
Fold over the page to turn back to later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, you gotta save the good passages.
Yeah, for your spank bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Well, I will certainly be rereading this entire book because I...
Absolutely.
Yeah. I hadn't visited it in a while.
Have you read, you know Cat Person? That short story?
Yes.
So she, Kirsten, she's published the collection of short stories now.
Oh.
And the opening story, I think it's called Bad Boy.
Oh.
And it's like this story about some friends whose friend breaks up with his girlfriend. So they have him stay. And then they just end up playing all these like sex games with him. But but then they take it too far and it's really horrible and traumatic. But the way that Kirsten sets it up is it's like, it's really interesting. It's really interesting. I would recommend it.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
To read it.
Here.
Yeah, I loved Cat Person, so that's a great recommendation. I will take
that.
Yeah,
listen to it.
Thank you. So, well, are any and all of these going into our spank banks, would we say?
I mean, Anais Nin is there forever.
Yeah, Nin is there. For yeah. Sure.
Nin forever. Lives there. This is the house of Nin over here.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the E.E. Cummings one, for sure.
Yeah. Me too. And your work, frankly, Elmas. Like, I think you have some really great stuff happening there.
It's super sexy.
Very hot.
I can't wait to read them all.
Yeah. I might have to, like, dissociate just thinking about you and jilling off to it necessarily. I'll just return to the stories and I'll remind myself that it's fiction.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's very arousing and really delicately and beautifully written.
And for our listeners, where can they find your stuff?
Yeah.
So you can read all the Kaylee Daniels Dated stories on kayleedanielsdated.com, and then it will send you to a link to an Etsy shop to buy PDF versions of the stories. But all the sexual health materials are free on the website to view.
Cool.
Great. Excellent. Awesome. And then did you want to also just drop your own social media handles? We'd love to give you an extra plug there.
Oh, yes. And then you can follow Kaylee Daniels Dated on Facebook and Instagram with the handles Kaylee Daniels Dated. And on Twitter, it's Kaylee D Dated. And then you can find me across all of the social media outlets with the handle at Almaz Ohini.
Great. Awesome. And I'm going to spell them for our listeners. So Almaz Ohini is AlmazOhene. And Kaylee Daniels, Kaylee is spelled KayleeIgh. Daniels, DanielS.
Cool.
For the real ones who are going to go look right now. We'll also tag Almaz and her series on our Instagram, so you'll be able to find you on social that way, too. Thank you so much for joining us, Almaz.
This was so lovely.
A wonderful journey.
Thanks so much for listening to Girls on Porn. You can find us on Twitter at GOP the Podcast, on Instagram at Girls on Pern, that's porn without the O, or on our website at girlsonporn.com.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show if you haven't already.
And if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, include your Insta handle and we'll post it and tag you, expressing our abundant gratitude.
And finally, we are looking for an intern. If you're interested in working with us, you can find contact info on our website to email us. We'll be accepting inquiries and applications from all over. Feel free to work remotely. And if you write in, just tell us a little bit about yourself, any relevant experience, and why you'd be into it.
This has been Girls on Porn, the only GOP that's actually good.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.